for pointing out this sort of controversy between Sweden and the Netherlands that I don't really see all the time, and I don't think Sweden does either. But it is easy to put these two approaches opposite each other to, well, to make some kind of point. And of course, it's your perspective at how you look at sex work. I remember years ago, I was at a function where so many mom was, and she was then, later there were some problems, but she was then famous for rescuing little girls in Cambodia from brothels. And I mean little, as young as 5 or 6 years old. And many of these girls were, their services were bought by Cambodian men because they had the feeling that if you have sex with a virgin, you go to heaven. And this was kind of a good way to do that. And we were at the table, and one of my Dutch colleagues tried to explain to her the Dutch approach. And he was saying that it, well, and this was years ago, he was saying it was a pragmatic model, and it was to give sex workers autonomy, and it was to help them diminish the stigma, and that these were all good reasons to have the system that we had. And she sort of looked at us, and she said, this makes me sick to the stomach. Now, you might not have expected me to say that here, but what I want to say is, when she looked, when she thought of prostitution, she thought of a 6-year-old Cambodian girl in a Cambodia brothel. That, to her, is, was prostitution. She didn't want to think of that in any other way than that it was human trafficking, as it was, and exploitation, and all the other things. And she couldn't think of an adult consenting woman, self-employed, who chose, for whatever reason, to work as a sex worker. So the perspective you have on sex work, I think, also defines your way of looking at an approach of human trafficking. And I think that the debate, the moral debate on how would you like to have prostitution dealt with in your country is a very valid one. Only it is not really done so often. We try to do this via the way of fighting human trafficking. And I think that it would be good to look at it from a moral point of view and then come to whatever outcome you do, and aside from that, fight human trafficking, because that should be, well, in my opinion, the focus. And then, of course, the big question is, and it was already put forward this this morning, does legalized prostitution lead to more human trafficking? And Sweden says yes. I say we don't know. We have no data, we have no anecdotal evidence that it does. And why? Because it's a double unknown. It is an unknown how many sex workers there are, and it's unknown how many victims of trafficking there are. We as a country are quite well organized in counting and collecting data. So we have a few data, but not as hard to really count as evidence. We have, for instance, about 8,000 in one count, 8,000 individual telephone numbers on the internet selling sexual services. Now, that could mean that there would be about 8,000 self-employed sex workers. But it could also mean that one sex worker uses several phone numbers, or one phone number represents a whole brothel. We don't really know. So this is an indication. We have some idea of how many licenses there are given out, but and we could know a little bit better for how many women these licenses are put out, but that still, that is, that fluctuates, that varies, so this is also not a very set number. And what we heard earlier, that if you look at prostitution, like street prostitution, you can eliminate that. We did that in the Netherlands. And then it goes elsewhere. And in the Netherlands, it goes to brothels, it goes to window prostitution that are basically also brothels, to clubs, to massage parlors, to self-employed prostitution at the house, to couples clubs, to saunas, to whatever form of prostitution you want it to be. I mean, a massage with a happy ending is considered sex work in the Netherlands. So, and will fall under the prostitution regulation. So we don't really know how much is around of that. And then concerning victims of trafficking, we do not know that either, because what we count in the Netherlands are possible victims of trafficking. They are reported, but it's not. We cannot combine them with the names of victims in court cases. So we do not even know whether those are privacy regulations, whether how often there is a match. And of course, with the numbers that are reported, one of the things that makes those numbers rise is when there's more attention, when there's more active looking for human trafficking. So, and what we also see, of course, there are false negatives, there are false positives, so it's an indication. So if you have two double unknowns, you honestly cannot at this time in science say that one leads to the other. It can lead to different forms of prostitution. And what we see in the Netherlands, even if we have the brothels and the window prostitution, we see a decrease there. We see quite a massive decrease, which is not has not just something to do with prostitution, but also with the way people order things nowadays. I mean, if you want a pizza, you look online which has the best reviews and you order that pizza. And that will be the same much more when you look at other services. We do that for so many things now, and we see, so if we want to fight human trafficking, looking and law enforcement in just the visible parts of prostitution is by far not enough. So we have to go online and look for what's offered there. I would like to say a little bit about the history of the Dutch prostitution policy, the Dutch perception, some international views, and our new law. This is what I want to say about prostitution, and I want to say something about the fight against trafficking, and at the end on something on the demand side, which will, well, we had a very clear overview of how to look at demand this morning, and of course in a country where prostitution is partly legalized, then you look at demand in a different way than when it's not. If we look at the history of the Dutch prostitution policy, that lifting the ban on brothels was in the year 2000, and the perception of the Dutch sex worker then was a self-employed, somebody who knew what she sued for, and not somebody who was dependent. If that perception was right, I don't know, but it was kind of the perception that was predominant at that time, and that led to the lifting of the ban of brothels. Does that mean that everything is allowed in the Netherlands? No, not at all. It means that prostitution is legal unless it is prohibited by the municipality or regulated by the municipality. And practically all municipalities in the Netherlands have some form of regulation of prostitution. Now, looking at this perception of sex workers, today there, a young researcher is defending her thesis on sex work in the Netherlands, and she comes up with an interesting theory that there are so many There's so many linkages to domestic violence, and I think that is true. It's one of the things that I've also seen. A third of the victims of human trafficking in the Netherlands are Dutch. That they don't come from a poor country. They don't come from all come from broken homes. They are in some way vulnerable, maybe even at as young an age as 13, when they are groomed to sell sex in a later stage when it becomes legal after 18 years of age, and they are hooked. And sometimes they're hooked into believing that this is what they want and that they really love this guy and they have a sort of double dependency relationship. That doesn't make it less human trafficking in my view, but I do agree that we should look at all the shades of gray in this whole area, because there are so many different victims, perpetrators, so many different forms of exploitation that you can't talk about one size fits all, because it doesn't. And then we have several international views on what to do with prostitution. Of course, Amnesty had an interesting appeal to decriminalize prostitution completely. I did not agree with their appeal. That might also surprise you, because I thought it was too wide. It was, I think that if you decriminalize it completely, without any regulation, that you lose sight of those who are vulnerable, because even if we tend to have this woman, Dutch sex worker, in mind with the lifting the ban on brothels, there are also 18-year-old Roma girls from Hungary who are very vulnerable. And we have an organization of sex workers called Proud in the Netherlands, and that consists mainly of those Dutch women. They speak for that Dutch woman, and maybe for some Romanian or Bulgarian women who've been in the Netherlands for a longer time. They do not speak for those that the government is responsible for. So I think that when making your policy on prostitution, you should also talk with sex workers to understand what they want, why they want it, but do not do just what they want, because they also have their own agenda. Now, I advised about 9 years ago, 10 years ago, to adapt our law on prostitution. And this law has been drafted. It went to Parliament, then it went to the Senate, and it was sent back to Parliament. Now it's again back in the Senate, and I have supported it all along, although I was not completely happy with the way it turned out. At the end, in the beginning it was different. The big change is that prostitution is forbidden everywhere unless licensed by municipality. So that is a really turning point. The age goes up from 18 to 21, and all forms of sexual services are under this law. That was, this uniformity is what was one of the things that I found really imperative. But last June, our Minister of Justice has listened, I think, to the representatives of Proud, the organization I told you about, a little too much, because then he said self-employed sex workers will not require any form of registration or license. And with that, you put quite a large part of the prostitution industry, sex industry, outside of the regulation. And that, for me, is a step too far. I'm not saying that I think they should need a license. Registration would do for me. But there should be a way to control their circumstances, for starters, control their age, to see if the advertisement on the internet corresponds with the person that they are. So this is now, we are now forming a new government, and in my letter that I sent this morning to this to be formed government, everybody does that, you know, a lobbying letter to say that your stuff you go deal with is the most important and needs more money or more attention or whatever. And in that letter, I said that the new law as it is now cannot really count on my support anymore. So this is a little bit of an overview on how the Netherlands has dealt with prostitution for the last 17 years. But there's one part that I think is also important. 16 years old, I said it earlier in my question, 16 years old in the Netherlands, you're sexually adult. So that's the age of consent. And before that, nobody thought of buying sex from a 16 or 17 year old that would be in any way a criminal offense. But with lifting the ban on brothels, that changed. So we put that in the criminal code, and the then Minister of Justice said, I don't think this will be an article that will be prosecuted very much, because it will be a kind of a dead letter. That was because the brothels will not have anyone under 18 in their brothel. You know, they will take care of that. And they did. But of course, if somebody wants to buy sex from a younger person, they will try and find that. And those who earn money from that know that there's a demand for younger girls. So in the last 17 years, in the beginning, the prosecution of this specific article was kind of low, and then it roared up. That was a case in the south of the Netherlands where a 16-year-old girl had been was a victim of trafficking. She sold sex in a hotel. Her trafficker was in the bathroom. He let the customers in. She was advertised online. And all these customers came in. The father had hired a private detective to find her. He called the police. They found a basket with nearly 30 used condoms, and they found a telephone where all these numbers were in. So it was easy to find these customers, and they've all been prosecuted. They said, well, she looked older. That is not relevant. If she's under 18, then even if she said she was 25 or looked 45, doesn't matter. If she is underage, you are punishable by law. And I think that this is a very important part of our legislation that is much and much stricter than in many other countries. And it is a legislation that protects children also from themselves, because even if they themselves offer their services without a trafficker behind the door, then still the perpetrator will be prosecuted. I am, nevertheless, not very happy with the sentences they get, but that's another story. I wrote a report on this, which is on my website, and it has been translated into English. So this is one of the things we do to fight trafficking, to have this article in the law. Another thing is that what I think is really very important to destigmatize self-employed sex workers, to make it possible for them to do their sex work safely. You shouldn't ask, well, maybe you should, but the question is not really, do you want your daughter to be a prostitute, but the question should be, if she has become a prostitute, do you want her to be safe? And that is one of the things that is a predominant factor in our legislation. We want these women to be safe. That's what the prostitution policy is all about. We really fight the trafficking. So the autonomy, the emphasis also on domestic trafficking, because we see that quite a lot. Also, at the end of the way, if the police and prosecution can do all sorts of things to fight human trafficking, but if they end in an acquittal, well, you're left with nothing. So I've been a judge for the most part of my career, and one of the first things I did when I became the rapporteur was look at what my fellow judges did with these cases. And of course, I found fault with them because they were my blood group, so I thought I could do that. But we did extensive research into things as how does the abuse of vulnerability, how is that perceived by different judges? How is the sanctioning going? Is it important whether the term of exploitation was longer than a year, or all that kind of things? We looked at those, and then I recommended that judges should be specialized, not just on the legal part, which is difficult enough, but also on, well, on what it means to be trafficked, how after half a year or a year to have been trafficked, that you do not, that it's not easy to testify against your trafficker. I mean, the Stockholm syndrome is something that we see here quite often. One of the things also is, as a judge, you want consistent testimony. If a victim of trafficking is consistent through the whole way, well, you know that she's lying, because you can't be consistent after having been traumatized in such a way, because you have to open the different parts of your brain to come forward with the next part of the story. So that is part of the education that judges get also. One of the things that I made a point of saying in the beginning, it was, oh, well, she comes from Romania and she was a prostitute there, so it's like going 50 years back. When you're a prostitute, you can't be raped. Yes, you can be raped, because I think everybody knows that now. And yes, if you are a prostitute, you can still be a victim of trafficking. If you are a self-employed prostitute, you sex worker, you have your own money, do with it what you like, that's fine. But if you are drugged or forced or coerced or misled, then you're a victim of trafficking. And that's nothing different from when you come to the Netherlands to pick asparagus. And you know you're going to do that, but you had not calculated that you would be locked, that you would be paid per basket, that you would be paid only at the end of the term, that you would be paid far below the minimum wage, hardly anything, that you had to pay for your place to sleep, all the trafficking circumstances. That's the same for victims of sexual exploitation as it is for victims of labor exploitation. So this is one of the things, and I thought, there being judges and lawyers here, this is one of the things that I would like to emphasize, because I think it is very important. And I'm going to add something else to that. This is something that I've seen in my research, and I see it when I look at judgments. In a way, your policy, well, no, let me say it this way. The policy on prostitution is something that you have as a society. It's not something that the government does. It's something that you do as a society in Parliament. But once that is a rule like it is, well, you heard from Sweden that in the beginning, their new rule, well, people were not much for it, but after several years, that changed. In the Netherlands, I think most people will tell you that our policy is, a good policy. And if you want to criminalize prostitution, you are old-fashioned, moralistic, or, you know, all the wrong arguments for such a thing. But, of course, judges are also part of our society. And what I see is that in the way they look at cases of sex trafficking, that idea of selling and buying sexual services is part of our, well, is normal, kind of normalizes also the way they look at trafficked victims. And that, I think, is completely wrong. So this is something that I'm fighting against very much, because this way of looking at it also extends sometimes to minors, like what I told you about the minors, that they have to be prosecuted, they are convicted, but then we read the sanction and the judge says, well, he wasn't really looking for somebody under 18, and he has a normal job, he's a normal man, like all of us, so, okay, he gets a community service. And I think that the reasoning in the logic in that, I don't agree with, because it goes too much from the idea that prostitution is a right that we have and we don't. I mean, it is something that can be sold as an autonomous right of a sex worker, but it's not a right that, it's not a human right that you have on prostitution. I was going to say something about demand, but I think I've usurped most of my time. I have a few more moments. Okay. Because of course, from the demands, on the demand issue, from somebody in a country where we have the prostitution policy that we have, we will not fight the demand for prostitution, because that would stigmatize sex workers. We would say, okay, we want you to be autonomous, we want you not to be stigmatized, we want to respect you, but we want to teach your children never to buy anything from you. That's a message that you can't give. But you can give a message of normal sexual relations. And I think that is, should be part of any curriculum in school. So awareness is important. And if we look at demand, there is a law pending now, which I supported, to criminalize buyers from somebody of whom they have a reasonable suspicion that they are a victim of trafficking. And I think that we should have had an article in the criminal code like that for years already. So that will come through. And also an awareness that if you buy sex from the internet and you have to go via three different telephone numbers and three different places and end up on an industry or a summer camp site, well, maybe then you should just go back and report this and not buy sex there. And also that to spot vulnerabilities is something that everybody can do. And it's the same with, like I said, don't buy sex somewhere where it looks seedy, doesn't look regulated. But if you have your kitchen painted, maybe you should also look at who the contractor hires to paint his kitchen. And if they come at 7 o'clock in the morning and stay till 7 o'clock at night, well, maybe you should also wonder where, if it should be as cheap as it is. Well, thank you very much.